Today we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5, Verse 42. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yannastvam karma sandhanam. Sadunam griyamedinam. Kittavanasi durmarsham. Vipriyam tava marshitam. Yannastvam karma sandhanam. Sadunam griyamedinam. Kittavanasi durmarsham. Vipriyam tava marshitam. Please chant. Yannastvam karma sandhanam. Sadunam grihamedinam. Kritavanasi durmarsham. Vipriyam tava marshitam. Yannastvam karma sandhanam. Sadunam griyamedinam. Kittavanasi durmarsham. Vipriyam tava marshitam. Yannastvam karma sandhanam. Sadunam vihamedinam. Kittavanasi durmarsham. Vipriyam tava marshitam. Yat, which, na, unto us, tvam, you, karma sandhanam, who strictly follow the fruitive ritualistic ceremonies according to Vedic injunctions, sadhunam, who are honest, because we honestly seek elevated social standards and bodily comfort. Grihamedinam, although situated with a wife and children. Kritavan Asi, have created. Durmarsham, unbearable. Vipriyam, wrong. Tava, your. Marshitam, forgiven. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Although I live in household life with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitri Yajna, and Nri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas, vows, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons, for no reason, to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. Please repeat after me. Although I live in household life with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities, to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitri Yajna, and Nri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas, vows, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Prajapati Daksha wanted to prove that he had been most tolerant in not having said anything when Narada Muni, for no reason, induced his 10,000 innocent sons to adopt the path of renunciation. Sometimes householders are accused of being Grihamedis, for Grihamedis are satisfied with family life without spiritual advancement. Grihastas, however, are different, because although Grihastas live in householder life with their wives and children, they are eager for spiritual advancement. Wanting to prove that he had been magnanimous to Narada Muni, Prajapati Daksha stressed that when Narada had misled his first sons, Daksha had taken no action. He had been kind and tolerant. He was aggrieved, however, because Narada Muni had misled his sons for a second time. Therefore, he wanted to prove that Narada Muni, although dressed like a sadhu, was not actually a sadhu. He himself, although a householder, was a greater sadhu than Narada Muni. Translation again. Although I live in household life, my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitri Yajna, and Nri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vows, vratas, vows, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. Namo Om Shivaya, Krishna Vastaya Bhutalaya, Shemati Bhakti Vadastha, Nitya Nani, Namaste, Saraswati, Devi Gauravani, Chalam, Shisha, Sunni, Vadi Vastaya, Istaya. Hare Krishna, thank you for coming here at this changed time during the Chandan Yatra. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Mahamaya Devi Dasi, and I have some experience in the householder life. I was married for 37 years to my husband, Gyana Gamya Das, who just 2 months ago left his body here in Mayapur. So it was glorious, but of course I miss him. And I have to give him credit for creating the opportunity for ladies to give Srimad Bhagavatam class. And I have to say, it wasn't because he was henpecked. I did not put him up to it. He had this idea on his own, and he pursued till he got the result of once a week ladies are giving class. And the only reason I'm giving is because he expected me to give class, and but there are many qualified ladies in Mayapur in the movement, and I wouldn't say that I'm one of them. But what can I do? At least the one thing I can do is tell you stories about Srila Prabhupada. So my plan today is to talk about this verse. Then I'm going to talk about how today is Akshaya Tritiya, and it's the beginning of Chandanyatra, so I'll talk about those. And if in the end there's time to talk, to share some memories of Prabhupada, I'll do that. So in this verse, Prajapati Daksha is, in my view, acting like a very puffed up person, thinking that he's a sadhu. He's saying that he thinks he's a sadhu, and he thinks that Narada Muni is not a sadhu. From our point of view, he's got it backwards. And so let's just look at what is a sadhu. So there's a verse in the third canto, 25th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's verse 21. It says, Titikshava Karunika Surida Saradehinam Ajata Shatrava Sranta Sadava Sarabhushanam. Translation is, the symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. So, in the lecture that Prabhupada gave on this verse, he was emphasizing that a sadhu's first quality is that he's a staunch devotee of Lord Krishna. So this is the most important factor, that a sadhu must be a devotee. It's not just somebody who looks the part. You can put on the clothing of a sadhu and draw the lines of tilak, but that's not enough. The person actually has to be a devotee. So in the purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada wrote, while engaged in preaching, he has to meet so many opposing elements, and therefore the sadhu, or devotee of the Lord, has to be very tolerant. And then Prabhupada gave the example of Lord Jesus, Haridas Thakur, and Lord Nityananda, who all had to deal with violence. And he said, Prabhupada wrote, they were tolerant because their mission was to deliver the fallen souls. So Narada Muni, his whole purpose in converting the 10,000 sons of Daksha was to help them become Krishna conscious. And so again, the way I see it is that Daksha has it backwards. And in some of these verses we've been reading, it's been hard to even hear the unkind things that Daksha's been saying to Narada Muni. And in fact, in tomorrow's verse, he's going to even curse Narada Muni. So we typically don't think of that cursing is a favorable activity for a devotee. So my understanding of Daksha's actions is that basically he's pretending. He's pretending he's a great sadhu. And one thing I can also understand is that when Narada Muni converted the first group of sons, it isn't that Daksha said anything. Like, he was being what he thought was tolerant, just accept what happened. But in the world, in relationships among people, there's something called communication. And if we withhold important communication, sometimes things don't go the way you want them to go. So the way I see it is that Daksha could have said something to Narada Muni. He could have said, okay, I accept that you convinced my sons to be renounced, but don't do that again. And he could have even gotten agreement. If he could, you know, if he had gotten agreement, then if Narada broke that agreement, then that would be understandable. He'd be upset, because breaking an agreement is like breaking, it's like having no integrity. And we want to always do what we say we're going to do. you know, especially when it comes to vows. You know, like we can relate to that when we take initiation or when somebody gets married. You take a vow and you don't want to break that vow. You've given your word, and all we are is our word. We can't, it doesn't really matter if you sign some paper. It's like, who are we that we're committing to do what we said we're going to do? So, just on this point of Daksha pretending, Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture in Bombay, and, well, it's called Bombay then, January 1973. And he said, without becoming a Krishna Bhakta, nobody can become a sadhu. Sadhu eva sa mantavya. Hu bhajate mam ananyabhak. He's sadhu. Not that sadhu changed the dress or having long beard. No. Sadhu means one who's purely devotee of the Lord. He's sadhu. So, Srila Prabhupada is basically telling us to be who we say we are, like to be real. So there's some impediments that we deal with on the path of being devotees. My husband used to call it PAD. Does anybody know what PAD is? It stands for profit, adoration, and distinction. In Sanskrit, labha, puja, and pratishta. So profit is easy to understand. People are looking for material wealth. Adoration, people enjoy if somebody is praising them and appreciating them. And distinction basically means fame. And I read an example of Prabhupada talking about people being so eager for fame that they're even willing to die. He gave the example of people climbing Mount Everest, and they may even die attempting it. But they're thinking, my name will go down in history as someone who attempted to climb this big mountain. So it's very deep. These are subtle, but they're deep, and they're very hard to give up. There's a letter that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati wrote describing these qualities as poison. I got this from the book called Jamuna Devi, the new book about Prabhupada's disciple Jamuna, which I highly, highly recommend. It was very inspiring to read. So she's quoting this letter in which Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati wrote, only when transcendental knowledge manifests in our hearts and we are finally able to perceive everything in relation to Krishna will we be safe from the effects of the poisonous fruit of pratishta, honor, and recognition. So he talks about PAD as honor and recognition. Thank you. So, how do we achieve letting go of these subtle anartas which make it difficult on the path? And Daksha is a perfect example of, you know, someone who's off the path. So how do we achieve that? So Srila Prabhupada many times said, if I have accomplished anything, it is simply because I did not deviate from the instructions of my spiritual master. I did not change his instructions. So my request to you, if you don't remember anything else from this class, is please be loyal to Srila Prabhupada. Recently I was in Vrindavan for the 40th anniversary of the opening of Krishna Balaram Temple. And Guru Kripa Prabhu gave class. And he told this story. I'm not even sure where this happened, but he said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I really love you, but I don't love the devotees in ISKCON. And Prabhupada said, I am ISKCON. And he thought he'd try again. And he said it a second time. And he got the same answer. Prabhupada said, I am ISKCON. So if we step outside like this invisible Lakshman Rekha that Prabhupada drew around ISKCON, you know what Lakshman Rekha is? I mean, actually, I don't think it was part of the original Ramayana by Valmiki, but it's become accepted as part of the story of the Ramayana, how Lakshman drew a circle around Sita to protect her when he had told Ram that he would protect her. But when Marichi, who had put on the form of a golden deer, when he died, he made his voice sound like Ram's. And so Sita sent Lakshman off to see if he could help Ram. And then she was left alone. And that's when Ravana shows up. This was all his trick. And he lured her outside that magical circle. So she lost his protection. So I feel like Srila Prabhupada drew a Lakshman Rekha around ISKCON, and he told us to not go outside. And I first heard this in 1974. Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Rupanuga Prabhu, and I happen to have it in this book called Srila Prabhupada is Coming, which I wrote. Because this letter impacted everyone in ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada told Rupanuga to circulate this letter to every temple, which he did. So you understand why. Whoops. Krishna. Okay. So I hope this is not considered controversial, but this is a letter from Srila Prabhupada. Actually, amongst my godbrothers, no one is qualified to become acharya. So it is better not to mix with my godbrothers very intimately, because instead of inspiring our students and disciples, they may sometimes pollute them. This attempt was made previously by them, especially Madhava Maharaj and Tirtha Maharaj and Ban Maharaj, but somehow or other, I saved the situation. This is going on. We shall be very careful about them and not mix with them. This is my instruction to you all. This is why Prabhupada had the letter circulated. He's saying this is his instruction. They cannot help us in our movement, but they are very competent to harm our natural progress. So we must be very careful about them. So then I wrote in this book, that was Prabhupada's letter, but I said, this was here in Mayapur in 1975, I was living here. So I said, because we live so near to Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers in Mayapur, our local leaders stress this point even more. Don't go to their temples. Don't buy their books. Don't take prasadam there. Be respectful if you meet them, but don't mingle. So back in the 70s, we did not go visit any other moths in this area unless it was with the whole group of devotees during the festival time. I mean, there's many other stories I could tell you, but I think you get the point. Actually, way before, okay, I do want to say one more quote of Srila Prabhupada in this regard, because there was a time in ISKCON when the devotees thought that Srila Prabhupada was going to do all the preaching. And then he got very sick. And he was, and this was in 1967. I mean, the devotees were hardly trained up at all. And Prabhupada sat them down and he was explaining how he's going to come back to India to get better. And he said to them, I am an old man. I could die at any minute. Now you have to carry on the preaching. And the devotees were stunned. They just didn't expect that it was going to be them. By the way, just a sideline, there never is a they out there, the anonymous they. You know, sometimes we talk amongst ourselves, like, they should do such and such. Sometimes we're referring to the leaders, but it's just kind of the anonymous they. Well, I just want to tell you, there is no they. Just take a look around, there's us. There's you and me and everybody else in this room. This is who ISKCON is. There's no anonymous they, it's us. Anyway, at that time, so Srila Prabhupada was asked this question, and they put Mukunda Das, who's now Mukunda Maharaj, they put him up to asking this question. He said, Swamiji, because that's what they were calling him at the time, Swamiji, in your absence, can one of your godbrothers come over and teach us and help us? So I've read several accounts of this question and how there was a very long silence once the question was asked, and everybody sat there feeling a very profound stillness. And finally, in a very low voice, Srila Prabhupada said, my spiritual master was not an ordinary man. He saved me. And then there was another silence. And then Prabhupada said, if one person comes, even one person, and changes one word, even one word of what I've taught you, the whole thing will be spoiled. Everything I have to teach you is in these books, in the first volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we are very fortunate that not only did Srila Prabhupada give us the first volumes that he brought over, and he said he put everything in it. He didn't know if he was going to be able to translate more. But he did. He did go on, and he translated so many volumes. So we have everything is there in the first canto, and yet he gave us so many more books. So please, if you ever hear anybody said Prabhupada didn't give us everything, either walk away from that person or defeat them or something, because that is not to be tolerated. So, again, I just ask you to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. He himself set the example. He said he didn't deviate from his spiritual master's instructions, so that means no change. He didn't add, he didn't subtract, he didn't interpret. He just accepted his spiritual master's instructions. Maybe in the Vedic days, when people would actually live with the guru in their ashram, there was, you know, some isolation, but in today's world, there's no question of isolation. We're bombarded on all sides. You know, things get out on the internet and go to the whole world. We don't even know how it happened, and just there's no boundaries, you could say, that Lakshman Rekha is only, you know, invisible line. So we have to create that and protect the movement from outside influences that are harmful. So Srila Prabhupada has given us a very big mission, which is to complete his mission, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. This is a major mission. It is not something simple. One time Actually, it was a non-devotee said to my husband, because he understood my husband's commitment to Srila Prabhupada and to ISKCON. This man knew who Srila Prabhupada was, but he wasn't a devotee. But he said to my husband, why don't you live your life as if it wasn't for you, Srila Prabhupada's mission would not be fulfilled. So do you understand that? It's kind of, in other words, if each of us takes on that, if I don't spread Krishna consciousness, it's not going to happen. If each of us live our life like that, because now we may be thinking, oh, there's so many other devotees, and there's so many more advanced devotees, and they're going to do the job, and I'm just going to be, you know, do my little service and be the small little cog in the wheel. No, he was saying, take on that. If it isn't for you, Krishna consciousness would not go on. There was a saying we used to say in the old days, which is, if everybody else bloops, that doesn't mean to say you have to fall into Maya. So, I don't know if that's exactly how we said it, but that was the gist of it. So I'm just saying that we could take on. You could say it's being puffed up, thinking, oh, you're the one. Well, why not think like that, and that your actions are going to actually have some result in spreading Krishna consciousness. Like, I know many times, especially when I'm in the West, I'm interacting with non-devotees, and I have a choice of telling them about Krishna or not. And there's just too many times when I don't tell them. I usually carry around invitations to the temple. They're mantra cards that are also invitations. Many other devotees I know always carry small books with them so they can distribute them. Other devotees go out on book distribution and they're carrying big books. But the point is, when you meet somebody, you have a choice of giving them Krishna or not. So let's make that choice of giving them Krishna and doing our part, like participating in activities that actually will spread Krishna consciousness. And pretty much that should be every activity that's going on in the temple, because whether it's on the front lines, or you may be in the kitchen, you may be washing pots, you may be watching children, attending to raising children, you may be doing, there's so many activities, but they're all leading towards spreading Krishna consciousness. They're all part of like that water brigade. Like, in maybe it goes on in India, but in the old days in America, they would have to pass the bucket of water from person to person to person, and the last person would throw it on the fire. So every person in that line was important. If they didn't do their part, that water wouldn't get to the person who was throwing it on the fire. So it isn't just that the person who may end up getting glorified, they're the ones that threw the water on the fire, but it was the support of everybody else, everybody doing their part. So we're all part of that Sankirtan water brigade, you could call it. So I just want to say that if you have a service that doesn't, what they call, light you up, like you wake up in the morning and you think, whoa, I get to do that today. Okay, if you're not doing a service that gets you motivated like that, then you've got to look at your life and figure out, like, what is that service that really, you know, I love to do it? You know, what is that? And then you have to figure out a way to do that service in your life. And maybe you can't do it right away. Maybe you're committed to some other service and you have to keep doing it. But still, you can make that a goal and eventually you can get there. But if you know what it is right now, just do it. Okay, you have to tolerate this understanding, but back in the maybe 1930s or 1940s in America, there was a politician who would, Okay, you know that in the West, people eat meat, right? So this politician had this saying, which was, a chicken in every pot. So he was trying to promote that, you know, if you voted for him, that your house was going to be opulent in this way. So we can Krishnaize this saying, and we can make it a goal, a bead bag in every hand. So when we have that, we know we've been successful. And until we see that, then we know we have our work to do. The work is cut out. So now to talk a little bit about today being Akshaya Tritiya. So this is the third Titi, or lunar day, of the bright half of the month of Vaishakha. And there's many, many auspicious things that happen today. Today's the appearance day of Lord Parshuram. Veda Vyas, with the help of Ganesh, started writing the Mahabharata. Well, let me just explain that this is the one day of the year that the moon and the sun are both exalted. So it's only once a year. And so the main thing we've probably heard about it is it's an auspicious day to start some venture or some sacrifice or gain some knowledge or to give in charity. And whatever we do grows and brings prosperity. So some other things that started was, it's the day that Treta Yuga started and the Ganga descended from the heavenly planets. It's the day that Sudama Brahma visited Lord Krishna. And if you remember that story, he got so much opulence and he didn't even ask for it. It's the day that Lord Krishna gave the Pandavas this special pot or bowl, which produced unlimited supplies of prasadam on demand, which helped them so much in their trials and troubles. And of course, today is the start of Chandan Yatra. So in Jagannath Puri, they celebrate for 42 days. They celebrate the first half, the first 21 days. It's called Bahara Chandan. They take their deities on procession to Narendra Tank. They start the construction of their Rath cart today. And then the second 21 days is called Bitara Chandan. So I'm not sure of the details of exactly what they do. But in our temples, you know, we all over the world, not necessarily today, because in other parts of the world it's not that hot today. I mean, it's blazing hot here. But in other parts of the world, they choose a day in the middle of their summer. And they cover, usually it's just one day, they cover their deities in Chandan. And so this tradition started with Madhavendra Puri. And just briefly, Madhavendra Puri was a great devotee of the Lord. And he was in such bliss that he didn't really know what was going on with his external body. So he was in Govardhan and he wasn't even aware that he was fasting. But this beautiful little boy came up to him with a pot of milk. And he said, "No one fasts in my village. And we, you know, the ladies in the village noticed that you're fasting," because he wouldn't eat unless somebody brought him something, and nobody had brought him anything to eat. So he said, "Please take this pot of milk. I'll come back later and get the pot." And then he just disappeared. And then Madhavendra Puri asked him, "Who are you?" He goes, "I'm just a cowherd boy, and I have to go now to tend my cows." And he just disappeared. And then Madhavendra Puri was thinking, "Wow, this is such a beautiful boy." And anyway, he drank the milk, and then he was up that night. He couldn't sleep. He was, just chanting Hare Krishna. And then at some point in the early morning, he dozed off, and he had this dream. And that same little boy appeared to him in the dream. And he said, "My name is Gopal, and I am in the bushes, in the jungle, and I want you to come and rescue me." Some Muslims had attacked, and the pujari put me here in the bushes and then ran away, and I, you know, been waiting for you to come and find me. So when he woke up, he was totally amazed. But he gathered the villagers, and they went and found this deity of Gopal. And Gopal had told him to bathe him with a lot of water and clean him up. So they placed him on a slab, probably a rock slab, on top of Govardhan Hill, and they bathed him with so much water, and then they got all the boga in the village, and they cooked up an enormous feast, and they fed it to the Lord. And then the other villages nearby, they heard about this, and so village after village, they did the same thing day after day. They did this Anakut ceremony, and eventually somebody built a temple for him, and puja was going on so nicely. And for about 2 years, this was going on, and then one day, Madhavendra Puri had another dream where Gopal said, you know, I was in the bushes for so long, I was under the ground, and my body is so hot, and I want you to go to Jagannath Puri and get some chandan and cover my body to cool me off. So Madhavendra Puri was a very old man by this time, but he couldn't ignore the order of the Lord, so he went to Jagannath Puri, and on the way he stopped in Ramuna, or the deity of Gopinath, and they were about to do an offering, and he was inquiring about the prasadam and the recipes, and then he was thinking, oh, I would like to taste that kheer that they're about to offer so that I could make some for my deity. And then he realized, oh no, I was thinking about enjoying before the Lord. Oh my gosh, I'm such an offender. And then he left the temple and he went to this deserted marketplace, that it was nighttime, and he just sat down and chanted Hare Krishna. So that night, the pujari, Gopinath's pujari, had a dream of the deities, and he said, there's this great devotee named Madhavendra Puri who's alone in the marketplace, and I have stolen a pot of my kheer. It's underneath my cloth, and I want you to go find him and give him this pot of kheer. When the pujari woke up, he was astonished. He bathed and he went into the temple, and sure enough, right there where the deity had told him, there was a pot of kheer. So he went to the marketplace and he said, Madhavendra Puri, Madhavendra Puri, the Gopinath deity has stolen this pot of kheer for you. Where are you? And so he finds Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri realized that after he drank the kheer, he thought, I'd better get out of here because word of this is going to spread around and I don't want, you know, to be famous and people saying things. And so he just went on to Jagannath Puri. But his fame had spread before he got there, which was actually a good thing, because then the king of Puri was able to give him chandan and camphor and give him paperwork, so he had safe passage back. So he was on his way back to Govardhan to see his deity Gopal, and again he stopped in Ramuna, and that night he had another dream in which Gopal told him, just take the chandan and smear it all over the body of Gopinath, and by doing that I will feel it and I will be satisfied because I'm non-different than Gopinath. So ever since that pastime happened, then the Vaishnavas have been performing this pastime in their temples of covering the deity with chandan. So I've been talking for so long, but I wanted to share one remembrance of Srila Prabhupada. So when I lived here in Mayapur, there was very, very few devotees, maybe 125 total in Mayapur. About 25 were Westerners, and about 100 were Bengalis. And they were mostly Bangladesh refugees. But in any case, they were Bengali devotees. And out of the 25 Westerners, there were 6 women. And we were able to go to Srila Prabhupada's evening darshan. It was open to whoever wanted to go. So and I got the service of taking care of Pishima, so I actually, she wanted to go to the darshans, even though she didn't speak English. Still, she would go to the darshan. So at first, few days before she got here, I was going to the darshans and feeling a little guilty because my training as a new devotee was that you're not supposed to gawk or, you know, stare at the spiritual master. It's better to do service. So up to that point, while I was in India, I didn't go to Prabhupada's darshans because I was taking on service and thinking that was better. But then one devotee finally kind of got through to me and she said, you know, this is not going to last forever. You should take advantage of being able to go to darshan when you can. So I decided to go, but I still was feeling guilty until Pishima came, and then I had the service of helping her up the stairs and so on. But this particular day, I don't remember Pishima being with me, so I had gone to the darshan. And then I went downstairs, because Prabhupada's rooms are still there in the Lotus Building, and they're open certain hours for devotees to visit. So it's on the second floor, and on the first floor was the Didi kitchen. It's not there anymore, but the Didi kitchen was on the first floor, and the devotee who was cooking in the kitchen, Vrindavan Biharini, she wanted to know what Prabhupada had said in the darshan that evening. So I was standing there repeating whatever I could remember, when all of a sudden, Bhavananda, who was Maharaj at the time, he came from Prabhupada's quarters. He comes down the stairs and he finds me and he says, I want you to go back to Prabhupada's room because the FRO man, the Foreign Registration Office man, is here and he wants the list of all the foreign devotees. So my service was that I was the temple secretary. And that was one of the things I was supposed to do, was keep a list of all the devotees and their passport numbers and all that information. Never was up to date, but when somebody needed it, then I would update it. So I said to him, well, it's not ready, but I could have it ready in the morning. So he said, okay, go upstairs and tell Srila Prabhupada that. So Prabhupada had already told us to leave the darshan because the darshan would be from 5 to 6 and then arti would start. And since the original temple was the first floor of the Lotus Building, we could hear the bells ringing, you know, for arti, the, you know, kirtan. We knew that when arti started, and Prabhupada didn't want us to miss arti. So he would tell his disciples to leave, even if there was some guests and the darshan was still going on. So I had to go back into Prabhupada's room because Bhavananda was telling me to. And he was co-director with Jaya Bhattaka Maharaj. I wasn't going to say no. But I was a little, you know, conflicted about going back in. So I went into Prabhupada's room and I paid my obeisances on the straw mat just inside the door. But I didn't sit on the mats, you know, on the mattresses covered with white sheets. I didn't sit comfortably. I just sat there in the doorway and looked at Srila Prabhupada waiting to be acknowledged to speak. So there was a break in the conversation. Like I said, the FRO man was there. It was a couple of men. And then Srila Prabhupada looked over at me and nodded for me to say something. And I said my little thing, that I have the list of the foreign devotees. I would make it available in the morning. Then I looked over at the FRO man, who I'm not even sure if he really looked like this, but I just think he had like a little mustache. He had kind of was like beady eyes, like kind of penetrating look at me. And then he looked over at Srila Prabhupada, he looked at me, and he goes, "Who is she?" And I was taken back, like, what is Srila Prabhupada going to say? Because as one of his like rank and file devotees, I really didn't know if Prabhupada knew who I was. I mean, I figured he didn't. I was just, you know, one of the devotees, right? And so I looked at Srila Prabhupada, and he just very confidently said to this man, "She is the secretary." And I was so happy, you know. It's like, Srila Prabhupada not only knows who I am, he knows my service. Like that. So there's in the Lilamrita, Satsarup Maharaj, there's one description of how he was so happy when Srila Prabhupada had accepted his service. And he described how he ran down the streets of New York in bliss. And I felt that same way. I just left that. I mean, there's always a material explanation, like Prabhupada just figured it out. But that is so not how I took it. I was, you know, very happy that Srila Prabhupada knew. So again, just to complete, because RT is going to start, I especially feel empowered having read about Jamuna getting her association. And Prabhupada had said to her that she has to teach others what he had taught her. Like, this was Prabhupada's very deep instruction to her. So it's true for all of us. Well, we don't have to worry about ourselves. We've already been saved, you could say. We have the message of Srila Prabhupada. We have the chanting of the holy name. We're committed to following the process. But we need to give this to others. So what we have learned, we need to teach others. You know, give them what we have. And make them fortunate. Prabhupada used to say that. Make others fortunate. So I thank you very much for your tolerance. And I think we have 1 minute before RT starts. So are there any... I'm sorry I talk very fast, and I hope that you have been able to keep up with what I'm saying. Thank you. Yes, Shukla Prabhu.
And Srila Prabhupada's comment was that they may go away and they may flourish, but eventually they will dry up. And once I asked Srila Prabhupada, out of hearing, chanting, reading, remembering, what was the most? And Prabhupada just looked at me and goes, "Hearing." He says, "Is that?" And so the importance of hearing from the right source is so emphatic, and he did not want anyone to really deviate in that regard, but offer all respects to others as well.
From a distance, yeah. Offer respects from a distance. Thank you. Very much. Yes, Sadhana.
Hare Krishna. If there was 100 Bengali devotees at that time and only 25 Westerners, was the class, was the darshan also in Bengali then, or was it always in English?
Prabhupada's darshan? It was always in English unless there was some guest who didn't speak English. There was very few guests. There was no one coming to Mayapur. If a guest came, it was a big thing. You know. I mean, first of all, they'd have to stay overnight because it was so hard to get here. And Prabhupada would have us go in the kitchen and cook prasadam if guests arrived. It wasn't even an offering, which is, you know, I mean, I remember the preps we used to cook. It was, you know, potato sabji and puris. I mean, if there was fruit, also we could offer. But, I mean, there was just so few guests. So only once do I remember that the Bengali devotees came to that evening darshan. And that was because they were, a lot of them were involved with cultivating the land. And so they had grown sugarcane and had harvested it. And that was actually a group effort. That wasn't just, ISKCON did not have the equipment to harvest. We were using, you know, the local circuit of equipment that they'd boil the sugarcane juice right there out in the field and make it into gore. And they brought a sample of their first gore, mixed it with some peanuts so that it was, you know, gore badum. And then they brought that to Prabhupada. So it was the men and their wives. And it was only a small group of them, maybe, you know, a half a dozen men and their wives. And they came to this one darshan, and Prabhupada was talking to them in Bengali. And it, you know, even though I couldn't understand, it was just such a sweet communication and reciprocation. And that was the only time that it was in Bengali. Prabhupada, you know, when he came, he was giving classes in English. Well, the first day he gave a class in English, and then after the class was all over, he said to Subhag, who was Das Brahmachari at the time, now translate into Bengali, and he was stunned. I mean, the whole class was over, and then he's supposed to say it. And the first day he couldn't do it. I think actually Nittai Chand was the one who did it the first day. But then after that, Subhag was prepared, you know, that Prabhupada was going to ask him to do that. So then after that, he was able to. But can you imagine, you know, listen to a class for 20 minutes and then say it all back? I mean, anyway, it was geared around the Westerners. That's it.
Why?
Prabhupada, although he wanted us to learn Bengali or Hindi, depends where we are in India, he also, you know, English was the language. You know, I also a firm believer that Bengalis should be learning English. And it's not just me. I mean, it's Prabhupada, his books are translated into so many languages. It isn't that you can't read Prabhupada's books without learning English, but still. During festival time, they didn't translate into Bengali at all. It was just before festival time. It was a slightly different schedule at that time, too. We used to sing Udil Arana early in the morning, and Bhagavatam class, as far as I remember, was before greeting the deities. I can't remember the exact schedule, but I remember singing Udila Arana. I think, and then we had class. I think that's how it went. And then we greeted the deities, and then had Guru Puja. That was the schedule.
Could it be that he was trying to establish it as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness? That's why it was always in English?
Well, it is the International Society. I really loved Anutama's class this year during the festival, and he was saying, this is not the Bengali Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is not the Russian Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is not the Men's Society for Krishna Consciousness or the Women's Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he went through a long, long list, remember? He said, this is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Well, English is like the international language, you could say. Okay, Mahalakshmi's with hand, raising her hand. Mahalakshmi Prabhu.
No, curiosity. All these Bengali devotees were initiated by Prabhupada.
Yes, they all got initiated by Prabhupada, but there was a distinction. Some of the ladies could not chant japa. If you gave them japa beads, they would just talk to each other. They just didn't have the focus, the attention, the determination to chant japa. So he still initiated them, first initiation only. And he told them, your japa is kitchen seva. And they went to the kitchen and they chanted, you know, they did seva, and that was their chanting. But anybody who could actually chant, He gave first and second initiation, and there was only a handful, really, at least among the women, it was very few. The men were, they were able to chant somehow. I guess that's the challenge of, you know, preaching to the women in India in general, because I also, Radha Kund was in Ahmedabad, and Prabhupada had told her something about, you know, how women just like to gossip or something, he said like that. And it's difficult for us to preach, it's more difficult to preach to the women, he was saying, because there's this tendency to talk so much. On the other hand, when we did get guests coming to the temple outside of family, sometimes there would be groups of people who would come, and it was 99% women. It would be like 100 women and 2 men as their chaperones. So it seemed that the women were the devotees. But, you know, what Srila Prabhupada is giving is a philosophy, and we do need to learn that philosophy. It's, you know, it's chanting is the essence of it, but there has to be understanding, you know, and so people have to learn that, and whether they are, you know, a body suited for or not, they have to learn that. So things aren't like that in these days. We see, you know, so many people joining the movement, men and women. It just, I don't know, that times, I mean, things are, we're really, you know, different in the sense of communication just wasn't going on. I mean, you couldn't even use a telephone in those days. You know what a telephone conversation would consist of is, I can't hear you. And that was about it, you know. You just could communicate with people who were right there face to face. So I think that, you know, the world has gotten a lot smaller, and therefore things have caught up quite a bit. And, you know, we see women join the movement who are brilliant, who are educated, so on and so forth, men and women. It's not, there's no distinction like that anymore. But yes, Prabhupada was very merciful with, you know, he did say he put everything in first initiation, and he was pretty much strict about it, but somehow he was very merciful in India with giving first initiation. He was much more liberal than in the West. In the West, you had to, I mean, aside from the very first, very beginning of the movement where he initiated people really fast, you know, if they were agreeing, they would get initiated. Then he made rules. You had to be practicing for 6 months, and then they really stuck to that. Like that was the standard. Nobody got initiated faster, and you know, devotees, you know, in the early days, a lot of people did bloop because they didn't really fully understand. And Prabhupada wanted us to be fixed up in Krishna consciousness, and yeah, I understand. There's a few of those ladies who got initiated who are still here. Yeah. Did you know that? Yeah. Some yeses and some noes. Yeah. There's a few left. And yes.
I have one request. Mataji, you just now said that whoever is in ISKCON, we should not step out. And we are doing good that we are inside ISKCON, but we should share the message.
Yes.
As a result of my sharing the message in a school, that boy's son told his father, who became my student, his name is Sudhama, and Sudhama came to meet Krishna today on Akshaya Tritiya for the first time, as you just now told, and I need blessing for Sudhama. Prabhu, please raise your hands. And he and his team,
welcome.
And his wife, I want all of you to please bless them to really grow in bhakti, because they are very wonderfully faithful people. They never stepped into ISKCON so seriously. Within 6 months, I requested, and they have come to Mayapur on this auspicious day for the first time. We slept by 12:30, something like that, all of us. But they came, got up at 2:30, started chanting and came for darshan. Uh-huh. And they were the first ones waiting there. Because of their costume, they couldn't enter. We're waiting. So, you know, if you all can bless them, to really progress. All of you.
Hare Krishna. Welcome. Well, you know, when we preach, we're definitely stepping outside our comfort zone, and we're stepping outside to reach other people. But that's different than other Vaishnav groups. That's what's confusing, is that there seems to be so many similarities, and you have to be very sharp to be able to discriminate between the differences. So it's better just stick to the association of ISKCON devotees and let's preach as widely as possible. Yeah, so do you understand that difference? Thank you so much for coming here, and especially for the first time, and all of you for listening. Hare Krishna, glory to your Papa.